And it is the first Sunday of 2024, which means
a new theme and a new year.
New year, new theme, and new Bible reading for 2024. So when we launched this on Sunday, we said we were going to be spending a year with the prophets. Hopefully you picked up a Bible reading schedule on Sunday. I stole this one from Jeff. And it will have the complete schedule of the reading on the back of it. Also, that's going to be on the website, probably near the very same place where you access this this podcast. So everything for the 2024 reading is out there now, and hope you're spending your week making your way through the first read in the prophets.
Except it's ironically not a prophetic passage, not a prophetic book.
Okay, so yeah, the first thing on the list is Deuteronomy 18, so you want to go there in your Bible. Remember that the reading has these two pieces in it. There are these more brief, typically weekly readings,
right?
And then also for the month of January, if you want more of a reading, you can read the prophet Obadiah. That's kind of our minor prophet that we will include with every month's reading. So you kind of have two options how you want to approach this. If you kind of want a bit more of a light read, one that you can kind of keep coming back to and reviewing, there are the weekly texts that you'll be given. And then if you want to get a little bit more of a challenge and really get more familiar with the prophets, by the time the year's over, we will have read through all of the minor prophets if you keep up with the schedule.
If you do the extra reading, yeah.
Right. So like we did with the letters of Paul, we will pick on Jeff all year because Jeff does the heavy lifting with the Bible reading. We usually collaborate on the concept, which then gets dumped in his lap, and he has to flesh out the details of what the actual texts are going to be. So I will probably start frequently with,
why in the world did you do this?
The question, why did you pick this text? Though, right. I have to tell you, Deuteronomy 18.
You get that one?
Not a surprise at all. That's probably the earliest text in all of the Bible, giving us a really good sort of detailed breakdown on what a prophet is. And so if our goal this year is to spend some time reading in the prophets, you called actually January a primer on the prophet. So what do you mean by that?
Yeah, it's the readings that were chosen for January were several passages, some in the prophets, some not, but were meant to help us grasp a little bit more the nature of the office of the prophet and the role and the work of a prophet and what made a prophet a prophet, and in particular what made a true prophet, and a false prophet. Because then, like now, lots of people presume to speak for God, and God's people had to be discerning about rightly recognizing who really was speaking for God and who was just giving their own opinion, you know, under the mantle or cloak of this is from God.
You know, when you say that, It reminds me that this big worldview idea that's underneath all of that, and that is we need to know what God said.
Right, and that there are people who want to deceive us about what God said.
Right, and so whether it be acknowledging him as the creator and the Bible as his word, that's a piece of this.
Right.
Or learning to distinguish between people who say I'm speaking for God and people who are legitimately speaking for God. By the way, that's not an unfamiliar problem because in our own culture, we have people all the time who say, well, you know, I just think Jesus, and then fill in the blank. Jesus would be okay with the life I'm living, or even saying things that they believe Jesus said somewhere or in some way that are completely inconsistent with who he is. It's kind of an ongoing struggle. And so why don't we unpack this text you chose in Deuteronomy 18 a little bit, which is a really rich text. This is in Moses' farewell address to the people.
That's right. You know, and so when you remember that Moses and his work were kind of the beginning of God publicly working among people again. We've come out of the patriarchal age where God would go to Abraham, where God would go to Joseph. You know, kind of individual men and patriarchs of families. And now God is working with a people. He has brought Israel out of Egypt, has publicly presented himself on Sinai to them, and has given them a covenant. And so all that factoring in, and he's done that with Moses, through Moses. Moses is a great prophet, among other things we mm-hmm. can call Moses. And so what Deuteronomy 18, you know, really why we're here is this is the first time, as you already alluded to, that God really kind of lays out what a prophet is in the Bible. And he's doing that because Moses is about to die, and so the people are going to need to know after Moses is gone.
Right.
How do they rightly discern who is really speaking for him after Moses' death and who is not? And so Moses will talk about that. And so that's one piece of why we're here. Another piece of why we are here is that God also says, as Moses is about to die at the end of the book of Deuteronomy, that he will eventually raise up a prophet like unto Moses. And so Moses was clearly then a prophet of a different sort than many of the other prophets who would follow. And so, again, all this brings into a crucial aspect of what a prophet is and what a prophet does. What we're trying to take away this week as we read and understand this is this, that a prophet like Moses is a prophet who brings a covenant from God, who brings, and a covenant is basically, you know, God, what God is committing to do for you and what you are in return committing to do for God in obedience. That's the essence. And thus you and God can have a relationship. Everybody agrees to what their roles and responsibilities are in this relationship. And so Moses brought the law, what we call the law of Moses, a covenant where God says, this is what I'm going to do for you. And in response, this is what you're going to do for me in obedience. There was no other prophet like until Moses, until Jesus comes. He is the prophet like until Moses, because Jesus brought another covenant, a new covenant. All other prophets, whether it's the Old Testament prophets or the New Testament apostles and prophets under Jesus in the first century, all other prophets simply call God's people back to obedience of the or the covenant they live under. Or just encourage them to obedience under the covenant they live under, or remind them of the glorious hope in the covenant they live under. But the bottom line is that all of the prophets simply work within the covenant that God has given the people of that era. So the prophets after Moses deal with the Mosaic covenant, New Testament apostles and prophets deal with the New Covenant and have written down their words on what we call the New Testament. So, and then, you know, God gives the great litmus test for how you discern a true and a false prophet. A true prophet's words come to pass, a false prophet's words do not.
Well, and notice in verse 20 that this was all pretty serious stuff.
Yes, yes.
If you claimed to speak for God and were lying about that,
right?
The penalty was death.
Well, sure, because you were misleading people away from how to live before God. And I'll tell you, you know, that's a huge part for the false prophet. But a verse before that, there's weight on the people. And again, for most of us who aren't teachers and preachers and bearing the weight of making sure that we are rightly delivering the word of God and preaching and teaching it, I think for most of our folks who are listening, it's verse 19 that's the real weight, which is whoever will not listen to my words that a legitimate prophet speaks in my name, I myself will require it of him. And so while those who speak for God bear a weight, everybody else has the extreme duty and the weight of you must listen to the legitimate prophet of God because he brings God's own word.
Yep.
And there will be a responsibility for not listening to the true prophet of God. And that is just as serious as those who dare to falsely speak a word in God's name.
Well, and he says in 18, I will raise up a prophet from among their countrymen like you.
Yeah.
And I will put my words in his mouth. And so the reason all that is so heavy is because these men were not speaking for themselves.
Right.
But in fact, this was God's message put into their mouths. That made me think about Exodus 4.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of have some similar language going on, right? When Aaron speaks for Moses.
Right.
You are to speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I will be with your mouth and his mouth, and I will teach you what you are to do. Moreover, he will speak for you to the people, and he will be your mouth and for you, and you will be as God for him.
Yeah.
So that same kind of idea. You know, in this case, Aaron is Moses' spokesman.
Yeah.
So Moses is going to give him the message to deliver the people.
That's
and as
right.
a comparison, what God says is to Moses, you're going to be like God.
Yeah, that's right.
And he'll be your prophet.
That's right.
He'll speak to you. So the reason that's so critical then is because these are not just random words given by a man. They're actually the very words of God.
Right. And ultimately, too, Dave, you know, some of this goes back then ultimately to kind of what you and I were talking about in our last text talk of last year, or, you know, on December 31st.
On Bible authority. I'm glad you brought that up. That would be really relevant to what we're talking about today.
That's right, because ultimately, you know, what our starting place for this year in the passage like this is there is no – religious opinion does not matter. What only matters in religion is authority.
Yep.
What are the words of God? Who has the right to speak for God? And are we listening to the duly appointed and legitimated spokesman of God?
Yeah. So let me go back and just grab a worldview piece here that I think is really, really important. This is decision time about what we believe about the Bible.
Yeah.
Because what's being claimed here – is that when the prophets spoke, or when you get to the New Testament, when the apostles speak or write, they do not say, these are my opinions about what's going on. Isaiah's not saying, I've just had enough of the corruption of my day. I'm going to write a book about that.
Right.
It's always, these are the words of the Lord. And so I say that because one of the things I hear a lot in culture today is, well, you know, Paul said that, but Paul wasn't a married guy. And
so he can't speak about marriage or about women,
clearly anti-woman. You know, really, Paul had trouble getting a date, and he's kind of bitter toward women, which influenced the whole subjection thing he talks about in Ephesians.
Right.
That language completely misunderstands what the Bible is claiming.
Right.
Doesn't matter whether Paul was married or not.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how Isaiah felt about the conditions of his day. What they were claiming was, what I'm giving to you, God gave to me and said, tell them.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And so when we read the prophets, that's what we're hearing, men who were called by God to be his messenger to his people.
That's right.
Like Obadiah.
Yeah, so a little bit about Obadiah.
The supplemental read for January will be the book of Obadiah. Just a word about that.
Yeah, quick word about that. So as we do the minor prophets this year, we're not reading them in chronological order.
Right.
I've tried to pick not always, but somewhat what I think is easier to more challenging. So the reason we're opening with Obadiah, we're still practicing. And you and I are going to be modeling, as I mentioned this morning. We're modeling, how to read the prophets and these various themes and ideas. So I wanted an opening minor prophet that I think you can get without a whole lot of extra, without a whole lot of extra, except, just a quick word about the background of Obadiah. It's a short one. It itself is short. It's only a handful of verses, one chapter, handful of verses. And the situation of Obadiah, it's really not that complicated. Don't get distracted by city names or anything else. It's really pretty simple. Obadiah is a prophet who is prophesying in the early part of the exile after God has allows Jerusalem to be destroyed by the Babylonians. And Obadiah is actually not so much to or about the people of God. It's to the Edomites. And the reason God is having Obadiah prophesy about the Edomites is that in the fall of Jerusalem, as Jews were fleeing, as refugees were fleeing the Babylonian onslaught, some of them went south looking for refuge in Edomite territory. And the Edomites, rather than granting them asylum, sanctuary, helping them out, instead enjoyed and kind of relished in the downfall of Israel, the downfall of Jerusalem, destruction of Jerusalem, and just kind of rounded up the Jews, persecuted them, handed them over to the Babylonians, and that outraged God. And as you read Obadiah, you can see, part of it was they were unnecessarily cruel. Part of it was because Edomites were descendants of Esau, so thus they were actually kin.
Yes.
They were brothers. And so God will also, as you read Obadiah, you'll see part of what outraged God was the Edomite treachery in the sense that you are kindred. You should have all the more, for family's sake, been kinder to these fleeing Jews rather than just rounding them up, taking a sadistic glee in their downfall and handing them over to the Babylonians. Shame on you for that. And so God will pronounce judgment on Edom. You will not escape Babylon either. And your judgment is just because you took the wrong kind of message, the wrong kind of joy and satisfaction out of my punishment, the downfall of my people.
Which, by the way, is one of the big ideas in the prophetic writings, the coming judgment of God on cities and nations who, for whatever reason, have gotten on the wrong side of him, have rebelled against him, are facing his coming judgment. Yeah. So that's going to be a frequent theme we encounter as we work our way through the prophets.
That's right. And so as you read Obadiah this week, you know, part of the, I think, the spiritual takeaway is a reminder that, again, even when, you know, again, Israel's in sin deserves judgment, God still cares that people not pile on unnecessarily, that they think that they get to take part in God's vengeance. And above all, you know, and again, I think about Proverbs that warn about this, you know, that you don't take a sadistic joy in the downfall of your enemy, even when it's legitimately deserved.
Should grieve.
You should grieve rather than...
And be warned.
And be warned. And that is exactly what the Edomites did not do. And so, again, there's a takeaway for us in that, I think.
One thing I would say just about reading this year generally, a lot of the readings are going to be relatively short. And so I would encourage you not to see the reading as just one time through as fast as I can. The reason the readings are brief is so that we can have some soaking time and opportunity to come back and read again and again and again. So, for example, in Deuteronomy 18, you know, don't say, okay, I read those few verses, I'm done, moving on. The idea would be to come back and read them again and again and again, really kind of get a sense of what a prophet was and how God was using them. And then in Obadiah, same thing, not a very long book. You know, you can sort of read this, you know, 10 minutes. And but take some time to really try to work your way maybe through some difficult language or some difficult concepts. As always, got questions, Jeff and I are happy to work at those as well. We are really excited about this read. We've been working for a long time to figure out how to get the church family more into the prophets, and we hope this plan and this year will be the year that we can do that. So start off in Deuteronomy 18 and in the book of Obadiah. Enjoy your read this week.